Welcome once again to the NHL Executive Suite. I'm Deb Placey, and we are with Ray Shiro. Of all the father-son stories in the NHL, this is one of the best. Ray's dad was an all-time great coach, Fred Shiro, who won a couple of Stanley Cups. Ray has now won a Stanley Cup as a general manager. He was an assistant GM for a long time for Ottawa and for Nashville. And he's also a general manager that I covered on a day-to-day basis for a few years with the New Jersey Devils. And we're so happy to have him in the executive suite. Welcome.
Great to be here, Deb. Nice seeing you again. I've heard some of these with you, and I think I'm ready.
Okay, all right. I'm sure you're ready. Although, I'm sure you would rather be doing this with your team gearing up for a playoff run.
Yeah, like last year. That'd be fun, huh?
Are we far enough along in the season to call this a disappointment?
No, I don't think. Actually, record-wise, in terms of where we are as a team or as a franchise or where we were 2 years, like this is my fourth year. So last year obviously was a fantastic season for us on and off the ice. And in terms of disappointing record, yeah. But in terms of disappointing 2 years ago, the 16-17 season, that was disappointing. I think we're at that point, that was right before we had in the 16-17 drafts, we ended up having, I think, 20 picks overall, maybe most in the league. And so that was a year where it was a transition culturally where we wanted to try to get to. And I was disappointed in myself, and I was, you know, myself and John Hines, and that that's not, you know, the type of team that we wanted. The first year in 15-16 was established respect in the league again, and in terms of the work ethic of the players, was the most skilled team. But at the end of the year, my goal in 15-16 was just earn respect to the league, how we played. At the end of the year, I know our last game was, I think, against Toronto and game 82 and at home, and I said, a successful year, I was asked, like in training, I'm like, game 82, that our fans after game 82, whether they're going to the playoffs or not, they see the vision we have, sharing that vision. But the third thing being, when that game 82 was over, they respect the effort the team gave and they can be proud of it. And I think that we established that. So the second year, I think we gave a lot of it back. And so for the, you know, last season going to training camp for 17-18, goal again was out in training camp, is throwing respect back in the league. I think we lost it, we gave it back. And I think last year was the 17-18 season was a transformation for me culturally. And it was just a combination of getting lucky, well, being bad enough to be lucky to win the lottery and with Nico Hischier, and but also, you know, Will Butcher signed with us as a college free agent, but all of a sudden Jesper Bratt comes in. That group of guys and some of the veterans that we had, but also the younger players, that these kids, they just love to practice. They love to learn. They want to be around the rink. They want to. And that was a start to me that leads to this in terms of culturally. It's so different than it was 2 years ago. And obviously with a lot of draft picks this year, we have a lot of kids that are eventually turning pro in the next, maybe this summer, next year. But we're starting to finally see, and that was a year ago, some of these younger players that we've drafted or been fortunate to sign as a free agent like Butcher, and, you know, to kind of set the table or stage as to what we are. And, you know, it's been a hard year in terms of injuries at our goaltending early. Disappointing. I guess you could use it, but I'd use a different context of the disappointing part.
What context would you use?
Just in terms of the record, we could be disappointed, but not the process we're going through to get where we want to go, and not ever deviating from what we talked about and how we're going to do it. But also, you know, going from the oldest team in the league to one of the youngest, obviously. So, you know, with the number of draft picks we have and free agents and cap space, and, you know, we talk about culture all the time, and I say all the time that there's no industry, there's no business, there's no sports team that says, I want to have a bad culture. Got to change the culture. What is that? I don't even know what that means. Culture. I can look it up in the dictionary.
It's kind of a buzzword.
It is, but you can look it up in the dictionary, what it means. I don't believe that. I believe you have a culture when you feel it. And I felt it last year. I still feel this year in terms of what we have and what we're about. And, you know, the kids that broke through last year for us and kids that are on the team this year and next, they're started with us in development camp after that. I mean, so that this is a process we've gone through. So that is culture. You feel that. And it's a really good, it's a tough stretch. I mean, right now we've, you know, Taylor hasn't played since, he missed 30 games. But part of the process we're going through, and it's not, we haven't deviated. And, you know, our managing partners, Josh Harris and David Blitz, are fantastic, been behind us 100% and makes it possible. And, but again, we have a little ways to go here. But to answer the question to start with, it was more fun last year. But this is more fun than 2 years ago, put it that way.
Okay. So you mentioned playing without Taylor Hall. What the heck is going on with Taylor Hall?
He's not playing. No, he had a scope done last week. He'll only come back this year if he's 100% safe. Have practices, and if not, anyway, in April 6th, something like that. So we'll see. But he hasn't played since December 23rd, so that's obviously been difficult. And again, if he's 100% comfortable, confident, and part of that too is mental. He haven't played since December 23rd, so we'll see where we are in a few weeks. And obviously, we're a better team with him. And obviously, last year and being basically healthy the whole year made a big difference for us.
This doesn't sound long term. The intent still to sign him long term.
He's been incredible for our franchise. Obviously, with him not in our lineups, as hurt. I think we've been really good for him, and it's been over 3 years and last year. But he's been something for our franchise that really haven't had like that in a long time, as you know. So, but that's our intention is to really sit down with him and try to see if he feels the same way. But again, at the end of the day, we still have another year left. But the intention is to sit down somewhere after the season, well before July 1, and just kind of. It's not like hey, here's the contract, sign it up. It's like anything. Like, okay, we're going to get into some longer term, or it's like with a free agent. Okay, what are you selling? What are we doing? So they need to know that, and I want to know that from their standpoint. I think the respect and relationship both ways has been really good, and it's an important player for our franchise, certainly. So that will be the hope, sitting down, and something that can work for both of us in longer term, and if that's meant to be, and we'd like to have that happen, and we'll see what happens at the end of the season. We sit down, and it's been a good thing for us and the Devils, and we certainly miss them this season.
You guys have such a good relationship now, but you talk about that first year that the team didn't go where you wanted them to. What was the turning point? I know there's this famous dinner, I guess, that you had or he had with John Hines that really turned things around. Tell us about that.
It was 16-17. It was first year with us. It was my second year there, but you talk about the culmination of events that were just hard to believe, basically, is that, that's his first year with us, of course, 6 years, and I think it was 6 years in Edmonton, and not made the playoffs, nor had any of those young players, obviously. And the team that was the 16-17 team I was talking about 2 years ago, I was disappointed, and it was at the end of the season. It wasn't an exit. I was so pissed that it didn't matter. Like, I only had, I had four exit meetings. And the first question, you want to be traded, huh? Andy Green or Corey Schneider, like, huh? What? I'm like, yeah, what? Why do you want to be here? Really? Why? Why do we want to be here? Why do we want to be a trade? I don't get it. So when I sat, so I had dinner with Taylor. And it was a four-hour dinner in Hoboken shortly after the season on a Friday night, beautiful night out. So we sat down and had that dinner I didn't know if it was going to end in 4 hours. Everybody thought that was like planned or something. Like, no, I just asked him the same question I asked those other guys. Do you want to be traded? And he could have said, yeah. And that would have been check. And he looked at me and said, I knew you were going to ask that. I'm like, what? He goes, I talked to Corey. He gave me a heads up. I'm like, oh, yeah. So let me say another fashion. Do you want to be traded? And he went into it. He went into all the things that why he did not want to be. You wouldn't believe this. That was like, it's a beautiful Friday night on Hoboken. And the TVs are on. Of course, they got Edmonton playing Anaheim in the playoffs. I'm like, this isn't good.
What are the odds?
What are the odds? It wasn't good. So they're in the playoffs. We're not. Taylor's not. And that was tough. I mean, but it ended up being 4 hours because it was really in my point in my career, in Pittsburgh 8 years or having guys like Crosby and Malkin and guys like that. And I told him, I said, dealing with players better than you. I don't think that offended him. I mean, I'm talking Crosby, Malkin. And, there's something I might do a little, but you know what? Here's my experience. I'm going to share it with you because I've got, I've got two boys at the 20 and 22. Like, not, and he, I, we turned it a 4 hour conversation because there's a lot of personal stuff in which I probably opened up to him more than I did with any player about what I'm about, my situation, how he felt, why he felt. First question, if he didn't want to be traded, well, why not? And what is it? To really dig down as to him. I found a lot about him as, growing up and, doesn't have any siblings. Found a lot about his dad and his mom and what was important. And I told him, I said, it hurts. I mean, and I said, do you trust me? And he told me that he did. I began to say, why? I've been with you for a year and you've had like seven GMs already.
And eight coaches.
Exactly. So I got my level five, but I'm not coach, man. But he told me, I mean, he's a smart kid. You know, he did a lot of research and, you know, playing at the end, playing with the world championships or guys from Pittsburgh, I'm sure he talked to, whatever, as to why. Or I'm like, yeah, and but I want to, I'm like, yeah, you say you do. That's easy. But I'm going to tell you something, like, you don't practice that way. You want to be really honest. Here's what I think. And I think that was the start of really probably another 2.5 hours. In all honesty, here's to get where you want to be and why you play in the World Championships Canada all the time, but you don't make it the Olympic team. You can make the U.S. team, but it's okay. But no, it's to be.
He thought he was doing enough.
And how would he know? Like, 6 years in Edmonton, I get it. And, you know, I know it was hard not to take personally that they picked you to trade. And why not me? Why me? You know, it's hard not to feel jilted. And I could tell he was still, it's hard not to. But they moved on. They made a decision to trade him. And why him? And then the year doesn't go as well as we all hope. And this year was okay, but it wasn't what he wanted to be, nor, in my opinion, I wanted to be. And to get to what he said he wanted, and I go, yeah, to me, here is how, in my opinion. And but on top of that, do you ever lose anybody close to you, like, you know, a grandparent or anyone close? No? I'm like, oh, really? Okay, Taylor, like, do you have a dog growing up? No? Oh, geez, okay. Like, my dad died in 1990, so he was 65. And this is when I first heard that, you know, when someone close to you or a spouse or pass away, it's basically a year of grieving. I go, since you have never experienced that, I have, and I've gone through that. And this is more of a life lesson, is that there's a game on behind us. I know you need to see it. I'm going to give you 1 year of this grieving here. And then it's done. Like, you're done. Like, you got to be done. So you got like another month, basically, to woe's me. Why? Really? If you're going to, like, you're not going to enjoy your life. You're not going to enjoy your profession. You're not going to enjoy, I'm telling you, I've been through this. I've been through those expansion teams. I've been as an assistant GM. I've been through this. To do it with a group that hasn't done it, I am telling you, you're not going to experience almost anything better. I just know how special it is. And trust me, I had no clue. It would be the following year and would be the second last game and we would have to go like 12-2-1. I mean, I didn't know that. But it was, he had to move on. And it took a year for him. And that's why the following year, where he made changes in terms of his summer routines and did things differently. And, you know, when I think it was that summer he skated with Sid and all that stuff. And that's a level of different. And if you want to be the best you can be, and you want to be a leader, you want to be in terms of a lot of different things, how you can say it, but you have to do it. So last year was obviously an MVP season, but the whole, I mean, you saw, I mean, you were there, and it's just in terms of how the Devil fans totally embraced him. They were looking for something, obviously, and it was him. And some of those post games on the ice interviews with you and you know, Ric Flair videos, and it was just, he was all in, and it was just, everything came together well, and we won ourselves in. We didn't back in at all. That is what I talked about. Like, this group, it's so special. I mean, if you wanted to, like, get dumped in on a team that's been in the playoffs 11 years in a row or whatever, okay, great. But, and now, you know, it's the heightened expectations of that, which I don't think we're there yet, obviously, let alone injuries or whatever's happened this year, but that is collectively in terms of a culture that is so important to building something and belief from your fans but also from your group. It's important. Well, you know, you lost in 5 to Tampa in the playoffs. What? Really? I thought we'd lose in 3 maybe. Like, they're so good. Like, you don't think that was meant anything? If I'm like, really? What are we doing? You don't think that's important?
Yeah.
If that and how we did it? You know, so I think that was really special for the whole group and our fans but certainly for Taylor and, you know, to see him, obviously, a season rewarded and see him. I was happy for him personally and MVP. It was just a really satisfying thing. And, you know, I wish I had a crystal ball and said this is going to happen. But that's why when something like that happens, it's not just good for him, but it's great for the franchise and the fans. And as you know, they were, since Zach left and Kovalchuk, and it's been looking for something. And
they found it, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a great relationship, and it's great to see.
Your dad, Fred Shiro, you brought him up. Every time you get off the elevator on the 12th floor at the NHL headquarters in Manhattan, I don't know if you know this, but the quote is painted on the wall, "Win today and you walk together forever." How old were you when you knew that he was the one that said that? What was the significance for you?
Well, that was May 19th, 1974, and I was 12 years old, and that was before Game 6 against Boston. They were leading the series 3-2, and there's never been an expansion if they won the Stanley Cup, and they were playing Boston, obviously. But that quote that he wrote on the chalkboard has carried for, I mean, who knows, maybe he wrote it before Game 5 at the Boston Garden, but they lost 5-1. I don't think he did. So by the Game 6, I don't know why, but he did, and they won 1-0, and that was first expansion ever win a Stanley Cup, but it's been used so much, which is awesome. And I remember one of the Harbaughs at remember in the Super Bowl and reading Sports Illustrated, and he said, "Win today, walk together forever." And the first time I've ever really seen this, he said that was the Flyer coach Fred Shiro said that. I swear, I'm like, holy cow, really? That was awesome.
In the Super
Harbaugh,
Bowl.
Yeah, like that, and they said Fred Shiro said that. I'm like, holy cow, that's kind of cool. And that was certainly, and I've heard that. I haven't seen that in the 12th floor of the NHL offices, but that's quite the quote, and it's quite the team. And my father, as I mentioned, passed away in 1990. If I had one question to ask him, I'd say, if you lost Game 6, Dad, like what was the quote for Game 7? I don't know what that would have been. Like, I don't know.
And you look at it, though, he passed away at 65. That's so young now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Feel like cancer. He missed some of what you did, what you've done?
Yeah, but it was, you know what, it's my mom. It was funny because my dad coached 7 years. It's hard for the Flyers. And
seems like 17.
Yeah, exactly. But it's one of those things. Like, Dave Schultz only played 4 years for the Flyers, it's hard to believe. And it was just an iconic time in terms of capturing the city, and they're still beloved there, obviously, and no one's rooting for a cup more than the alumni, I'm sure. Like, really? Can you celebrate these guys? But it's my mom was alive when we won the cup in Pittsburgh when I was a GM there. But as always, what's really cool is my kids, they could see their grampy's name on it and their dad's name on it, which is kind of cool. And so that was good. But, you know, it was, you know, growing up around the Flyer teams then, it's really was something. And being old enough to those 7 years to remember everything and be around and in the locker room and driving everybody crazy. And but there's some special times. So it was fun.
He is responsible, though, for a lot of firsts, mm-hmm. for coaches. I mean, I could go down the list, including the first. He was the first to hire an assistant coach. Is that right? Mm-hmm. What do you think was his most important first? I mean, much to the chagrin, I guess, of definitely writers and broadcasters and probably even players, he came up with the morning skate.
Uh-huh.
The use of video and film.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think was most important, or what sticks out to you of all the firsts?
I said this during when he was inducted in the Hockey Hall of Fame in 2013, and I gave the speech, obviously, because he had passed away. And there was another first, which he was also when he played for the Rangers, he was defenseman for the Rangers for 3 years and in the 50s. And he was also the first New York Ranger to ever hold a New York City public library card. So, and he was, you know, he was an avid reader, wanted to go to law school, all those things from Winnipeg. And probably, I mean, first assistant coach, I get Mike Nikolic in 1972, was after my dad's first year.
Felt like he needed one, or wanted one, or didn't have one.
Well, it depends which side of the desk you're sitting on, because I know, because I did have this conversation with Ed Snyder and Keith Allen. And Keith had hired my dad. Keith, obviously, in the NHL Hall of Fame, so was Mr. Snyder from those cup teams. But I still remember maybe shortly after my father passed away, and I was at a Flyer. I don't know, I was just talking to, in the director's room, they call it the old spectrum, and I talked to Mr. Snyder and Keith. And I think I said to Keith, I said, I ask you a question, like, what? Because my father coached, he won championships a lot. We moved around. This was Buffalo and Omaha and St. Paul, Minnesota. Me and my brother getting dragged around. And then the first year he got, it was the Ranger farm team's coach in Omaha. They won the championship for the Omaha Knights, and it was the Ranger farm team. But, you know, Emil Francis was the GM coach, and he didn't hire my father, obviously, but it was Keith Allen that hired him. And so 71, 72, I was 9 years old. It was his first year coaching the NHL, and went down the last game against Buffalo at the Old Odd, and all they needed is 1 point, and they're in the playoffs. And Jerry Meehan came down and got over the red line, maybe blue line, took a slap shot from 55 feet out, and 4 seconds left. Doug Favell was maybe, it was fluttering, whatever, missed it. 4 seconds left. Lose 3-2. I was 9 years old, and I cried like a baby. And the next day I go to school. It was fourth grade. My welcome to Philadelphia moment. We're living in Ballack-Kinwood. I still can't spell Ballack-Kinwood, but I was in fourth grade, and some kid on the way to my class at like 8:30 in the morning yells through the fence, "Hey, Shero!" I'm thinking, oh, maybe someone can understand what I'm going through. Yeah? "Your dad, Favell, blew it." Oh, okay. I was like, oh, boy.
And you still remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. And so it was that summer after his first year, and he was about first, so I guess what happened was I'm going to ask Mr. Snyder and Keith Allen years later, you know, when he hired Mike Nick, like Mike had been a great AHL player, Hershey Bears and all that stuff, and so he hired him. So Keith tells the story, yeah, like, how'd that happen? He goes, yeah, so had a meeting after the season. Ed wasn't happy, so bring your dad in, and Ed talked about all these things, and anything you got to say? My dad's like, yeah, I would like your permission to hire an assistant coach. What? What do you mean? What are you talking about? I need help. Like, it's too much for one guy. You know, I'm telling you, I need help. My dad left with his briefcase, and Mr. Snyder looked at Keith Allen and goes, should we fire him, like, now or just tomorrow? Like, how stupid is this guy? He needs help? What the hell is this? And Keith Allen just said, Ed, like, maybe we should, like, we hired him. Like, we went everywhere. So it was really key, and they had that conversation. Like, what the? Ed was like, what the? Kidding me?
That's amazing to think.
And so
it
comes
odd.
In, yeah, and so in coming in, you'd see, like, in terms of, can you imagine, like, one coach out there? I mean, back then, he had the orange windbreaker. He's got the dress slacks on from Jack Lang and the tie and third practice. And then one coach, there's guys down the other end. Like, it's a lot, right? But then I always say, you know, how many now the coaches, assistant coaches, four, five, it's crazy.
Now so, it's so many.
There's so many. And I say to some of the assistant coaches sometimes, who was first, like, what? Like, you should know who Mike Nicklick is. Okay. I'm like, no, come on. Like, really kind of a breakthrough in terms of, you know, obviously with the Russian stuff, he really spent a lot of time there, and even well before the 72 series, but he remembers Red Army obviously coming in and leaving the ice of the Spectrum in 76, but that was, you know, the biggest game of it. They just won two cups, but when they beat him 4-1, and that was they were the best to my dad, like my father. That was the biggest game of the year, and they went to the finals again that year and lost to Montreal in four straight. But history of the Flyers and Ed Snyder and Mike Nicklick and all those things. So it's first. It's always cool.
Well, you mentioned the Russian connection. I did read that your dad was the son of Russian immigrants, right? Mm-hmm. You're the grandson.
Yep.
I actually am too. All four of my grandparents were born in Russia. But your dad was bullied as a kid about it. What, did he ever talk about that?
Yeah, like you. I mean, it was talked about that. I mean, they left to avoid persecution and everything like that. And, you know, we talk about this once in a while. You know, our family was around. Or they come in? And I wish I was older to actually ask questions that I could find out more. I'm just thinking, like, where's the Captain Crunch? Like, really? I didn't, but it was. But you, I mean, it's really, you know, his background in terms of, you know, he was in the Canadian Navy, and it was a boxer. Stan Fischler, my first year in New Jersey, I have it on my wall. I got it framed. He's got, when he played for the Rangers, and you can ask Stan this, but he's got the original newspaper cut from the New York, whatever paper it was at the time, and a recap of the Detroit Red Wings at New York Rangers game. And there's probably about four photos, black and white, obviously. And Stan pointed out to me, it's like, you know, in the second period, where Ranger defenseman number 3, Fred Shero, and Detroit star Gordie Howe engaged in what hockey observers are calling the hockey fight of the season, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, my dad fought Gordie Howe? What? And he lived to tell about it? But Stan was doing something about a year ago saying Gordie Howe, basically maybe the one fight he didn't win or maybe was against Fred Shero.
Because your dad was a boxer.
Yeah.
Did he find boxing, or maybe he just...
Probably, you know, he was really interested. I spent a lot of time with my dad growing up back... when we were living in Philly or Cherry Hill, New Jersey for 6-7 years, is that back then we would go to all the, remember they had closed circuit, to go to the Spectrum closed circuit. Boxing was great. So he was really interested in boxing, just, and he would give me some tips and stuff like that. And not enough for you to get beat up, but I played hockey, baseball growing up, or my, just get an education. Like, he would never push us anywhere, did whatever, just get an education. And but that, he had a different upbringing, a different, you know, in terms of, you know, reading and all these things he used to do in terms of sayings. And guys still have these things. Like, you know, it's, that's your thing as a coach or a teacher or anything in life, I would think, that's to make an impact in someone's life. And I think he did. And, you know, I'm, you know, the Hockey Hall of Fame and the Flyer Hall of Fame, but, you know, just more importantly, if you impact somebody in a good way, that's probably good. And so I think my dad did that. And yeah, so at 65, I was a little too young to pass away, obviously. And, but it's, he lived a great life and it was good.
So your dad could fight a little bit when he played. I wanted to ask you, what kind of a player were you?
I was a center iceman, and I was actually drafted by Los Angeles in 1982. After my sophomore year at St. Lawrence, played at St. Lawrence 4 years, but after my freshman year, I was supposed to get drafted that year, supposedly, mid-round, well, I don't know. And I didn't, so I was invited that summer to, there was a National Sports Festival. It was in Syracuse, actually. But before that, Lou Verrill, it was going out to Colorado Springs for the Olympic, whatever, is basically the equivalent, I guess, of the World Junior tryouts. And that's where I first saw Chris Chelios. So I was like, we were so intimidated because, where's he from? He played junior hockey, like Saskatoon. This guy, what? It was like so crazy. But I tore my ACL out there. And it was in July. And so missed all of my whole entire sophomore year at St. Lawrence. And I left St. Lawrence, I guess I was in the top 10 in scoring when I left St. Lawrence history, I guess. And then they got a lot of better players. So I tried to extend it a bit when I
top 20.
Well, you know, once I guess it was working for Ottawa, assistant GM of the league, top 12 they had in the yearbook, then to 15. Then next thing you know, they cut it off at some point. But that was, it was good. And I remember one game, my father, whenever he, you know, he never ever would talk to my coaches or anything like that, ever. And he would maybe, when he was coaching, maybe make one. I was at St. Lawrence, remember, came to the game at Yale, and we were playing, and there was a tight game, and maybe one goal game. And so someone, next thing you know, we're killing a penalty, but 2 minutes left, a 2-1 game. I'm out there killing a penalty, it's 5-on-4, and next thing you know, I don't know what the heck I was thinking, but I think I basically clubbed some guy with a head or something stupid. And I'm in the penalty box, and it's a 5-on-3 for the last, a minute 21. And I'm like, oh, my God.
My dad's going to kill me.
No. No, my dad would never say, hey, he would just say, you know, he'd talk about anything else. Yeah, we'd never talk.
He was supportive.
He never wasn't a big deal. He never talked to our coaches or anything. So I don't know what. Our goalie primarily saves. We ended up winning 2-1, as long as the minute 21. So I still remember I came to the locker room. And there was my mom. She still smiles as usual. And there's my dad, who was talking to Mike McShane, our head coach at St. Lawrence at the time. I'm like, that's kind of, he never talks to the coach. I'm like, what the heck? And so I guess Mike McShane went up to my dad and said, hey, Fred, good to see you. What do you think of the game? Blah, blah, blah. And I guess he said, what do you think of his penalty? So I walked up, I guess, and Mike McShane looked at me and goes, hey, I'm just talking to your dad. I'm like, yeah. He goes, I just asked him what he thought of your penalty. And only time ever my dad ever said about hockey to me, in terms of my game. Mike looked at him and said, what'd he say? Pushed up his eyeglasses, goes, I've been in the game 47 years. That's probably the worst goddamn play I've ever seen in my life. I was like, oh, where's mom, by the way? I'm going to see mom. I was in college. And that was it. So now he was so supportive and stuff like that. I'll still remember that because it never happened where he would do those things. He was always supportive and, you know, make sure you get your education, you know, and all that stuff. And
get a library card.
I don't think I ever did, but yeah, it was funny.
Who's the best player you ever drafted?
As a, being part of, as a GM or?
Yeah, as a GM. When it was when it was your decision, your guy. Who's the best player you think you ever drafted?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You remember some of the ones that didn't work out. We were talking about this last night. It's kind of funny how things work out, but it was, my last year with Nashville in 05. I was there 8 years, and the last pick in the draft that year, in 05, Nashville, we had the pick and picked Patrick Hornquist, which everybody at that point is backing up. And, with Patrick, it's a
best
story.
Last pick maybe ever.
But I'm pretty sure when I got the job in Pittsburgh, when I traded for James Neal and Matt Niskanen for Goligoski, after 8 years, when I got let go in Pitt, I think it was that summer that James Neal was traded to Nashville for Hornquist. And then Hornquist scores a cup-winning goal against Nashville, but he's playing on the line with Sidney Crosby. The first pick in the 2005 draft was Sidney Crosby. The last pick by Nashville was Hornquist in the seventh. What are the chances of me playing on the same line together, winning a cup?
I never knew that. That's crazy. I never thought of that before.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
Interesting.
And then, my first year of assistant GM, and I was only on the job for like 2 weeks, and Quebec City was a draft in ninth round, Pavel Dimitra. But I was there 2 weeks. It was so funny. We had him right in the first round, and we lost him, lost track of him. Honestly, we did. True story. There was no computers back then, and Jimmy Neal was part of that staff. John Ferguson Sr. And I still remember Fergie in the eighth round saying to Jimmy Neal or Tim Higgins or, hey, I remember you look at this first page, everything's in yellow, except for the guy we had 24th, Pavel Dimitra. So he said, who took Dimitra? Who took the Dimitra kid? I missed it. Well, let me check this guy. He says, that's for like five guys saying, oh, wait a second. Fergie's like, what? Someone run up the central right now. Get Gary Lovegrove up there. See, who took Dimitra? Timmy Kinson running back. He's still available. What? Ninth round, they picked Dimitra. I still remember our first overall pick was Alexander Day. So nine picks. The last pick in that was Pavel. Great pick, obviously, but we should have picked them early because we had him. We missed it. And everybody else did too, but we had him down. And so Pavel, what a great story. And he actually came down and he couldn't speak in English, came down to the table. And Rich Renner's the agent. And are you really sure? I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh, this is Pavel. And I'm like, oh, hey. I couldn't speak any English. I still remember this velvet red coat on. And yeah, this is not good. He was supposed to go in the third round, you know. I'm like, oh, what am I supposed to say? I'm 30 years old, assistant GM for 3 weeks. I don't know what to tell him. Like, oh. And he goes, I told him, the worst franchise in the history of sports right here. This is great. Not, like, oh, okay. I wasn't here last year, but yeah, who cares? They're still bad. The worst, this is not good. Like, oh, no, it's going to be all good. Come on back to the Chateau Laurier. They got a big party. They have this big bash and so many people. And they have the, you know, they introduce all the players that were drafted. First, you know, Alexander Day, they got the party things coming down the stage. And, you know, I'm in the back having a beer with one of our scouts or something like that. No, it gets worse because Rich Winter walks up to me with Pavel Dimitra. Like, hey. I'm like, oh, hey. Okay, how you doing? Everything okay with Pavel? No, it's not okay. I'm like, now what? What's wrong now? Like, we got worse? Yeah. What do you mean? How did we get worse? We just, like, this is like an hour ago we drafted. I'm like, what's going on? I told you, this is a joke of a franchise. Yeah, I heard you. So, Ray, do you understand that they introduced every draft pick on that stage? Except for Pavel.
They forgot it.
They forgot him. Like, what? Like, okay, I'm starting to agree with you now. This is not good. Pavel's sitting there. He looked like so. And then what a great story came in as an 18-year-old, made our team as an 18-year-old, and broke his ankle after like nine games, but what a great player, and he had missed those. And we're talking about some trade, and someone's talking about the Aginla trade and whatever, because of course they retired his jersey, and that year, so also traded for Brendan Morrow from Dallas at the deadline. So it was Joe Neuwendijk and myself, and we traded Joe Morrow in our fifth round pick to Dallas for Brendan Morrow in their third round pick. A few years later, that third round pick, we selected Jake Guentzel.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty good. So it's kind of funny how it works. And
I was going to ask you what's your best pick or your favorite pick for value, because you had some late, but Jake Guentzel, is he count as value?
Well, third round pick. I mean, Jake Guentzel, Brian Russ has played. Brian Russ, third round pick. Matt Murray, third round pick. Yeah, if I could have stuck it out for a couple more years. Brian Dumoulin, I mean, it was in the trade with the Stahl trade. He was at BC at the time. There were a lot of good picks by the staff there, and you know, we trade a lot of first rounders too. That obviously trying to win, and but it was those kind of underrated things. And when you know, I got gassed. It was, I think, 2 years later when they won the cup, and when you Matt Murray, Rust, Dumoulin, Guentzel.
Your fingerprints were all over.
Yeah,
that
well, no,
but
it's like no, in terms of you know, the value of the third round or the seventh round or something like that, or. The one of the Jake Guentzel thing was in Jersey draft. It was funny because Scotty Bell, the scout we hired, great guy, former Gopher player, captain, whatever, assistant coach there, great guy. But he knew Mike Guentzel and the Guentzel family so well, and it was really Scotty that I think actually was a very slight Jake, and I think we'd try, maybe he got a bone density scan on him or something like that we could do. I don't know what the hell we were doing. And it was so funny because that was a big thing, but it was like the trust, I think, between the Scotty Bell and Mike, the family. And so we ended up, the draft taking him in the third round. And so, what's it, 3 years later, you know, after you know, a couple years of college, whatever, I'm gassed. He's like, next in the playoffs, I'm like, this guy might win the Conn Smythe. So might have been the second period. They're in the semifinals, something like that. I'm watching. I'm like, Jesus, that's awesome, right? And I texted Jason Botterill. Jason was with me for 6 years, and he was obviously associate GM with Jimmy Rutherford there. And Randy Sexton was still there, and Randy hired me in Ottawa, and we went to school together. I hired him at Pittsburgh. I must have texted him, those two guys, during the game. And Randy, maybe Dan McKinnon, who was there now with me. I texted him like, hey, Jake Guentzel, did anybody ever find out what the results of the bone density scan? Everybody's like, I don't recall. Like, it didn't matter. This kid just got incredible hockey sense and talent instincts. It's a great story, and so you never know.
Talking about your time in Pittsburgh, and it reminds me, when I was first covering you in Pittsburgh, before I got mm-hmm. to know you as well as mm-hmm. I did covering you every day mm-hmm. with the Devils, you always reminded me, there was something about you as a GM that reminded me of Dave Dombrowski, who's mm-hmm. just won the World Series mm-hmm. as the Red Sox GM, mm-hmm. but I knew him when he was first with the Marlins mm-hmm. and in his 30s, a young GM, mm-hmm. because you're similar in that you're very approachable, mm-hmm. but behind the scenes, mm-hmm. zero emotion if you have to trade a mm-hmm. player, even though you're sort of mm-hmm. outwardly very nice mm-hmm. and calm behind the scenes. And I remember, Colby Armstrong was Sidney Crosby's best friend. Oh, he would never trade him. And you're like, make the team better. You have no second thoughts. When you traded Adam Henrique, all those Devil fans, boys and girls, went to school crying. But I have a chance to get Sammy Vatanen, and he's got more term left on his deal. You make the trade. So mm-hmm. behind the scenes, you know, much different than you are.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah. No, I mean,
deals to win that cup.
Yeah, you know, but it's like David Poile. I worked for David, assistant GM, for 8 years, and he was my mentor. And it's kind of funny, when I went to Pittsburgh in 06, and I hired Chuck Fletcher as my assistant GM, and he was 3 years with me and a huge part of winning the cup there in Pittsburgh in 09. But, David's mentor is Cliff Fletcher. Cliff, you know, when David got out of Northeastern, hired him. So the more values of a Cliff Fletcher or a David Poile and how they deal with people, and as assistant GM, the best job ever in sports, I'm sure. You don't get blamed for anything. You can make all the stupid recommendations. And I remember one time, you know, me and Paul Fenton, Paul and I was, you know, all 8 years with Paul, and he was director of player personnel. And we would, you know, I said to my staff too, like, David, I need ideas. Like, you have to be proactive. Like, you know, that David gave you so much latitude to do things and make mistakes, or, you know, but I need ideas. And so me and Paul, like, we'd be sitting there at his dad, like, how about this, let's do this, and he must have had a bad day, because he looked at us and said, shut up, have you guys ever fired anybody, have you ever traded anybody in your life?
Like, it's not so easy to do.
It's like your job, like, yeah, you haven't, well, until you do, shut up, because you know what it's like to call that player and turn their life upside down. Do you know what it's like to put someone on waivers and call them into? Why don't you think about that for a second? And so the more I got in, I mean, you find out, and when I came GM, all of a sudden you are, and I don't care, the next guy that's going to be a GM, all these lists they do and all that stuff. And I did that job for 14 years, and I loved it. I never worked a day in my life at assistant GM to be a GM. I did it because I loved it. I loved being, it was awesome. And
but once it's your responsibility. But
then you know that, you know, it's your decision. And I remember David said to me that, if you ever get a chance to be you're going to know to make the final decision. It's different, and that's going to be your responsibility. I'm like, okay, sounds good. But when I was offered the Penguins job, I was also at the same time offered another NHL GM job. I'm like, I'm not prepared for this, because I never got an interview before this in 14 years. I'm like, what the heck am I going to do? And I still remember I was at a Starbucks in Nashville. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I couldn't get a hold of my wife. She was, I don't know what. So I'm like, oh, God. I called David. David, you're not going to believe this. That they call, and they offered me that. So he's like, really? That's fantastic. He goes, wow. So you got to be a GM. That's amazing. But David, seriously, like, what do you think? You know, like, and that's kind of, what do you think? What should I do? And David said to me, I'll never forget. He goes, Ray, remember, all the years working together, I told you if you ever became a GM, you would have to make the decision. And I go, yeah. I'm thinking, like, so what should I do? He goes, Ray, you're going to be a GM. And you know what? We make that decision, and where you go, just let me know. Click. I was like, what? And that was my lifeline, was like cut off. That was a great, like, it's now you're making the decision, not me.
So what was it like when you had to tell Colby Armstrong that you were trading him?
The only way to do it, I learned really quick, is that, you know, it's easy to say because everybody to tell you, hey, I'm sure your mom and dad would say, Deb, whatever, you just tell the truth. Just be, and they'll, yeah, that's what, but that's kind of, really? Well, I know one thing, that's the only way to, honestly, here's the story, here's what's going on. Or I do find that they may not, they'll respect that and say, hey, you're going to feed them a line of crap. Like, really? Here's a, really? Don't lie. Then you can live with that. And that player, you find out you're upfront, honest with them. With Colby, I mean, we were ahead of schedule. It was like my second, 7-08. And it was really actually crazy because when we did the deal, it was right before the deadline. And obviously it was Hossa and Pascal Dupuy. It ended up being a great story as well at Pittsburgh. But part of it is like, we're talking Marian Hossa here.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, goes out the window in terms of feel. You have to do what's best for your organization, your ownership, and to make that decision, that really kind of trumps everything. And again, that call is tough. I don't think it ever gets easy.
We could talk forever. And you've actually traded and drafted enough players we could talk forever. But I guess this is unfortunately as good a place as any to end.
Because it's really sunny out.
Tell you that we look forward to this time next year, you being back in the playoffs.
Well, we hope so. Thank you very much.
Thanks for doing this.
Well, thank you very much, Deb. Good seeing you again.
Yes, you too.
All right, thanks.
Well, if there's one thing that you take away from this podcast, from this edition of the NHL Executive Suite, it's that Ray Shiro is a straight shooter. And really, just like he does with his players and with his staff, he has no problem saying what's on his mind. And you just have to have a lot of respect for that. He is refreshing. He has been very successful. And do have a lot of respect for that. And we thank him for being with us. Don't forget, you can always download the NHL Executive Suite on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And feel free to drop us a review. We always appreciate hearing from you. Until next time, I'm Deb Placey in the NHL Executive Suite.